The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and that little piece of music that you're hearing right about now from the Thompson Twins called King for One Day. Well, I tell you what, the guy that I'm talking to, who'll be talking to me, has been pretty much on a roll. It would be hard to argue against him being king for much longer than a day, you know, during the course of this summer. And of course, that person to whom I'm referring to is my good friend and yours, Mr. Freddie Winter. How are you doing?
That's a very, very nice introduction, Tony. I don't know about all that, but yeah, happy to have been getting some results.
Oh, you sell yourself short. I mean, you've won how many titles this year? I mean, you've won the Masters. Yeah.
Morocco.
Morocco.
And Botas. We're at San Gervasio, sorry.
We are at San Gervasio.
The aim is to win San Gervasio, I guess. Getting ahead of myself there.
So, I mean, you've had more wins than pretty much anyone else on the professional side of the sport at this moment in time. So, I mean, it'll be hard to argue anything against the contention that you're the slalom skier everyone is watching out for right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. No, I'm very happy. I've had a good start to the year. Over halfway through in terms of the events have happened. I think there's been seven or eight that have happened already, and we've only got sort of four more. So, but of course, it's about, you know, your season in totality, and I'd like to keep this pace up for the rest of the year. And I don't think I've always worked well with the idea that I'm chasing someone, and I think I'm gonna keep that thought for sure.
So if you're not chasing anyone, then there's only one other person that you can chase, and that's basically yourself, right? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, the thing is as much as I've had a couple of wins, there's a lot of very, very, very good skiers that have that are out there that can beat me on any given day, and you know, some that are building form, some that have already skied really, really well. So you know, there's certainly no rest happening over here, and you know, there's a lot of, like I say, a lot of really good skiers that can do anything on any given day.
What's in your mind? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have their opinions and looking at the wins and the podium finishes and everything else. You know, your recovery from that dreadful incident last summer that everyone was witness to in terms of pro water skiing. You know, I mean, what has been the major catalyst for you having this streak of wins going forward? I mean, there must be something that you have that very few others are struggling to get.
I don't know if anyone else is. I don't think I have anything that nobody else has. But I can tell you, I've got a very strong work ethic. And I'm very stubborn. I mean, anyone that knows me will say I'm very stubborn. There are people that would don't like that about me, and some that do. So I definitely, you know, late June, July, through till the end of the year, I didn't have any idea if I would be able to reach this level again. I can tell you that I was terrified that I wouldn't, given it's the thing that I've put every bit of my effort, energy, and all my dreams into over you know, my whole life, was to be at the level that I was at when I got hurt. So, I would say that I've just worked really hard. I've redoubled my efforts. I think I was always a hard worker before. I think hopefully, you know, you get older, you understand things a bit better, and I think I've put my efforts into some productive places. I don't think I'm the finished article. I think I've had, you know, I've had some wins, but I don't necessarily think that I'm at any sort of thing like a peak just yet. So, you know, gotta keep moving, gotta keep working, and yeah, I mean, I think being stubborn and not allowing the fear to overcome me that I wouldn't be able to get back has been a big part of it.
So yeah, so you talked right there about being stubborn, you know, and just persevering through. But there must have been some kind of obstacles that presented themselves being in your way of achieving what you've been able to achieve, was something that very few have had.
There was a pretty significant dock that was in my way, unfortunately, which wasn't the most opportune thing.
But I mean, I'm not talking so much about that. It's so much about the recovery afterwards, you know, because I mean, it's not rehab and getting back into the whole swing of things, as it were. I mean, you got to have some obstacles presented in your way, whether it's mental or physical, you know, going forward, you know. I mean, I've probably raised this question before on a previous podcast between that time and this, but I mean, can you recall or be date specific as to, like, say I was at this point in my recovery, you know, and things were going well, and then things went sideways in that recovery?
Well, I mean, I can tell you, it's interesting we talk about it today. It was this weekend of last year that I was in France watching this tournament when I got the news, having had a CT scan that week, that the upper half of the broken leg had been fractured during the surgery.
Ooh.
And that sort of meant that I was potentially, you know, it was going to be a lot harder of a recovery. In the end, it hasn't seemed to affect me, which is really good, but that was very scary. And then, you know, the other part was when they told me that my leg was rotated 14 degrees from what it had been, which was obviously, you know, you learn to ski a certain way for all your life, and then you got to, you know, adjust that way. That was very difficult, and I definitely found that difficult at the start of this year. But I mean, you know, overall, I'll say that I was lucky, and I think that, you know, that it's such a cheesy thing to say, but I just wasn't going to let myself be defeated by any bad news. And, you know, I've definitely had a couple of dark days when I felt a bit down, but no, I mean, you can only work with what you've got, and that's what I've decided to do. And actually, I think there's areas in which I'm stronger than I was before.
A lot of athletes of your ilk, you know, have draw inspiration from other athletes that have gone in the situation, like, case in point, for any of you F1 fans, this is going to be really, really nerdy, like the 1976 season, you know, of Niki Lauda, you know, I mean, you can imagine him. I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, I think it's called Rush, with Chris Hemsworth and
Daniel Brühl.
Yeah. You could sell this movie to us already, but I mean, basically the situation, crash at the Nürburgring, you know, with lungs filled with all kinds of carcinogenic stuff, you know, and basically burnt half his face off, you know, and he had to go through all of that, and he was motivated by the fact that he was watching James Hunt to win all those races, and, do you draw inspiration from something like that, or?
Well, I mean, we sat together for a lot of the tournaments at the end of last year, didn't we, Tony? And I watched all of that, and it was definitely better for me to be there and involved than to sit at home watching. I found it really, really painful to sit at home watching, and I saw Dane win his first tournament. I saw Lucas win. I saw Brando win. Who else am I missing? Oh, anyway,
Brando, Luca,
and David. I was like, well, that's great, they're winning, but I want to be there and pushing those guys. But I think that, you know, in terms of, it's funny you mentioned the movie. My sort of inspiration through this was Andy Murray, who reached the very, very top of his sport in 2018, 2019, maybe even longer ago, and was at his very, very peak, having won. You know, I think he won. He'd won the Olympics. He'd won Wimbledon not so long previously, and
well, he'd won the Olympics twice, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was after the second time, and he was world number one. He'd been world number one for a number of months, I think, and then he had this hip problem, and that film that it's called Resurfacing, I think, is the it's on Amazon Prime. It's Andy Murray, and that's probably the most influential and inspirational sports documentary I've ever seen. Just the way that he's my ultimate hero in sport, actually, above everybody. The way that he, even while he was not at his best, he came back, he had his hip replacement, you know, he just said, I'm going to go out when I want to go out, not because everyone else says. And that was kind of my thought, was, look, it doesn't matter if I never make it back to being any good. If I only get back to being, you know, to entering pro tournaments and not even making finals, I'm still going to give it my best shot, and I will know that I tried my hardest. And I think that, you know, Andy Murray is a guy that he never got back to the where, to where he had been, but he tried his hardest, and I think that is, you know, that's as inspirational and actually an emotional to watch and to emulate as you can get. He is the best of sport, in my opinion.
So basically what you're saying is your ability to control your own destiny in that regard, you consider to be of immense importance going forward.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. I had no idea how good I was going to be able to be again, and I just thought I'm going to give everything to it, because if I don't, then I'm going to, in 5, 10, 15, 20 years time, I'm going to be really, really upset with myself. So I just decided I was going to go give it absolutely everything, and I'm so happy and fortunate, and things have lined up in such a way that I've got back to the level where I was 2 years ago, you know, before I got hurt. And you know, I'm actually better than I was immediately before I got hurt. Last year I wasn't on as good form as I am now. So yeah, I there's been some luck for sure. There's been some bad luck in certain areas, but I, you know, I'm there's no one more grateful or I don't know, just happy to feel that I overcame something that was really quite difficult mentally and physically.
Does your readiness routine change, you know, between the routines that you've had in the past and whatever you do now post injury? Like, just before you get out onto the water and when you walk out towards the dock and that kind of stuff?
No, I mean, not really. A little bit more. But my leg's strong. I mean, I've done a lot of work in the gym, more work than I ever had before, and I'm grateful that has given me the opportunity to understand that I need to do a bit more, you know, be a bit stronger in my legs, because I had no muscle. I had to build it all back. So I feel like I'm a little stronger there. But also, like, I think at the start of the year, I was so terrified of water skiing. I really was. I was scared every time I woke up in the morning, just like, oh my god, you know, you never think you're going to have that happen to you. And so at the start of the year, for the first 2 or 3 months, every time I skied, I was shit scared, like, and until I was done with my skiing for the day,
just trying to ski cautiously, right?
Yeah, well, and trying to get the feeling that I could actually, you know, go fast and not feel like I was going to lose control and hurt myself again. But yeah, I mean, it's mentally, it's been tough. I feel like I'm doing a lot better. I mean, but I'll have to say, going back to Monaco, to Roquebrune, where I hurt myself, that was an extraordinarily difficult thing to do for me. I mean, I'll admit to you, Tony, like, I mean, I was on the way to the lake, you know, with tears running down my face before the first time I skied there. I was absolutely just terrified. And, you know, I turned up 2 days early, did my practice set. And it's irrational, because, you know that it's probably not going to happen again. But the fact that it did happen, you look at it and you go, well, you know, I drove in this time, and I thought, well, last time I drove in, I didn't drive out. And that was emotionally and very, very, very tough. But, you know, at the same time, it gave me an opportunity to face it. A lot of people told me, don't go. Mum and dad said, don't go. It's going to be too hard. You know, it's not worth it. My girlfriend at the time told me not to go, and I'm like, no, I'm going to face this. And it was my big aim the whole way through the end of last year, was to go there and actually, you know, hopefully win, but at the very least give a good account of myself and feel that I faced that, and I did. So that these difficult things that you have after injury, they give you an opportunity to sort of prove to yourself that you can be strong and to overcome these things. And I do feel that, as much as, I mean, I came second at that tournament, which is no disgrace by any means, I think that's as big of or an important thing that I have done this season as anything else. And I think that's, when I get to the end of my career, I think going back within a year, I mean, it was, 11 and a half months after nearly dying there. I mean, it really wasn't far off a fatal injury if I'd have hit another part of me.
Ooh.
Then I went back and faced it and overcame a huge fear.
So, I mean, it's basically like Rocky Balboa, you know. I mean, you know, just like try and get the beast out of your system, you know.
100%, 100%. And I left there, when I got on the plane to leave that place, when I finished skiing, I just had this feeling of emotion just leave me, you know, just like the nervous tension I'd felt for months. And I mean, this is not an exaggeration, for months and months and months, I'd been fearing going back there, and you know that was through some pretty, I don't want to be over dramatic, but it is the truth. Like,
yeah, that rock hard Ryanair seat felt comfortable for the first time.
Yeah, well, I left there and I'm like, okay, I did exactly what I wanted to achieve. I didn't win the tournament. Charlie Ross put in a phenomenal performance in front of me, and he did amazingly well, and he deserved that win more than anybody, of course, but more than anyone. But I was very happy to have put a good performance out there consistently throughout the whole weekend, and been able to face a fear, and I didn't back up. I went and looked it in the face, and it was really important for me to do.
Talk about support systems. I mean, you've had the support system from D3 skis and from Mastercraft boats, you know, at least so far as the sponsorship has gone, you know. But, you know, someone actually commented to me yesterday, and I've thought about it, and I'm kind of in agreement, is that, you know, a lot of skiers from Great Britain, from the United Kingdom, you know, let's compare this to some other countries. I mean, like Canadians, United States skiers, they all have this certain camaraderie, you know, like they enjoy hanging out with each other and that that type of thing. Skiers from Great Britain, on the other hand, he said to me, is the person that gave this opinion to me, was saying there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of togetherness or that kind of interaction between the top pro skiers from Great Britain competing in a lot of these events. You know, I mean, I don't know if you'd want to speak to that or anything like that, but I mean, I think it's something that may be worth addressing a little bit going down the line.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what the exact question is there, Tony, but what I can say for sure is that, like, I mean, you know, myself and Will Asher have been, you know, adversaries on the water for, you know, 12 years now, and we've beaten each other. Maybe, you know, it's not so far off being equal, whoever's ahead. And, you know, we've been in the top three, I would say, you know, consistently in that time. You know, we get on absolutely fine. I think, you know, and there's young guys coming up, and Joel Poland, who I'm a big fan of, Rob Hazelwood, who I like, and I mean, we're not sort of hanging out as best mates all the time, but, like, I enjoy their company, and I think that I've said this before, but you know, I was in hospital 3 days after, two or three days after I'd broken my leg, you know, feeling a little bit sad and miserable that you know, my season had been taken away from me and all that. And, you know, potentially my career, you know, we didn't know how bad it was, etc. And I get a message from Will Asher, which was, you know, definitely, I think it's definitely the most important message that I had of anyone. And I had many, but you know, and he, I don't think he'd mind me saying that it was quite an emotional message, you know, just like how much it sucks. But he finished it off and, you know, how he didn't know what to say, but he just thought he had to say something. And the end of the message, he said, you know, you've got the, I can't remember his exact words, but he said, you know, you've got the fighter spirit, and we will see you on the podium above us again. And that, I was just like, that, wow. It blew me away, because, you know, like you mentioned, I mean, you know, me and Will, visibly, we're not best mates. We don't hang out. Like, you know, we'd have a beer together at a bar or whatever after a tournament, but we're probably not going to drive to each other's houses and play PlayStation. but he, you know, he's a guy I couldn't respect his water skiing anymore, and, you know, we've had a lot of tournaments together, we've been fighting for wins and podiums over the years, and for him to, and I, you know, I see Will Asher as much as anybody in this sport as a winner. You know, he is, even when he doesn't win, he is a winner. He's one of the very best to have ever done it, and so for him to say that to me, and to sort of have that, you know, I guess mutual respect, was really huge. And, you know, I've told him the same, but, like, that, you know, there was during the sort of darker moments where I was a bit stressed out about if I was going to be able to come back, and you know, to the level that I wanted to, sort of, you know, I was like, well, you know, Will thinks I can do it, I can bloody well do it. And that's quite important, isn't it? You know, and I think that's a thing in sport, isn't it? You don't always have to be best friends with someone to respect them, and for that mutual respect to be there. And I mean I couldn't, like I said, I couldn't have more respect for Will Asher.
And we could probably extend that out, you know, to some of the up and coming skiers. I mean, obviously Charlie Ross is, you know, has always had the ability, you know, at least on the last few seasons. You know, I mean, I remember you calling his first ever 39 and a half off pass when, yeah. I don't know what age was he? Was he like
15, 16?
Yeah, 15 or 16, you know, and then like fast forward to now. And between that time and this, he's kind of struggled with consistency. He's never been short on ability. He's just kind of just didn't quite have the killer instinct, so to speak. And now he has both.
I think you're being a little unfair on him there, Tony. I just think that he's just learning how to water ski better. I don't think he's necessarily got more of a killer instinct this year. I think he's just got better, and that's what young people do. He's 19 or 20 years old, you know. And it's funny you mentioned, because yeah, I mean, I remember I wrote on his Instagram recently that I was on the microphone for his 39 off, and then for his first pro tournament 41, I was on the dock.
Yeah,
right after him. So he's a great guy. He's another really, really good skier that we're going to see do, you know, I'm sure he'll surpass all of my achievements by the time he's done. He's got another, you know, 15 years ahead of him at least before he even gets to my age. So
there must be some switch that he clicked, you know, prior to this season, because I mean, he won the Moomba Masters, right?
Yeah,
he's won Monaco. He's come close to the top of the podium on a couple of others, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, but I mean, if you draw upon results from the previous season, you know, I mean, there wasn't much of anything to speak of, you know, so far as top-level tournament results going through. I mean, he's got towards the higher echelons of the podium, or at least on the standards, on the final results. But I mean, could you possibly identify, I mean, any difference between last year and now that has contributed to what he's been able to achieve now?
I think he's had 7 months more on the water. You know, I just think he's had 7 months more in the water. He's a very, very hard worker. He eats, sleeps, and breathes it. I understand he skis a hell of a lot, and he's extremely motivated. So, I mean, I don't think that necessarily he's, I don't know, suddenly put a mental piece together so much. It's just he's more confident in being able to run big scores. And like, when you're a guy that can, when you're running 10-2-5 in practice and getting fives and, you know, even fours consistently, you're going to know that you can beat the guy who's running twos and threes. So I think that just comes from confidence in himself, and he's a better water skier than he was a year ago.
And I mean, he rides a D3 ski, and probably not the exact same model, mind you. But I mean, he might have made a slight tweak to that ski, you know, that just opened up something. You know, I mean, can it honestly be something that relatively simple that just turns it from this to that?
Yes, hard work pays off. I think that if it was someone who was 26 who went from running, you know, twos and threes and the odd four at 10-2-5 and then running it the next year and winning tournaments, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, he's figured something out. No, Charlie Ross is just a young guy who's improving at water skiing, which is very, you know, that I think he'll continue to do that. I don't think there's I could be wrong, but I don't think there's been a sort of maybe light bulb moment beyond him just kind of understanding that he's really, really good at water skiing, and you know, the score, he improves the scores again and again. I mean, I look at myself when I was that age. I mean, I was nowhere near as good as him, but I was improving a little bit every year. And he's making these big leaps. He's got a great setup. He's got a really good crew around him. He's very, very well supported from his dad and his sister, and you know, and the guys out there at the lake where he skis, and you know, he's deserving the success he has from the huge amount of work that he's put in.
Now, we're at San Gervasio, as you alluded to a little bit earlier on in this interview, and obviously this podcast is going to be slugged appropriately. But I mean, Charlie isn't skiing this weekend. He's in vacation in somewhere in Canada, I believe.
Yep.
And I think there are one or two other skiers that are probably going to take a little bit of a break beyond this point, you know, because the next major tournaments are actually titled events, which you don't typically be a part of, say for the World Championships, which is coming up in late August, you know. So you've got a little bit of time on your hands, so far as that is concerned. So what do you intend to do? Is there a concert or somewhere on something on your mind that you want to attend? Or
I'm taking next week off, that's for sure. I mean, we've had, I think, between Ali Nicholson Ali Garcia and Neely, who's not here this week, we've all done about the same amount of tournaments with the Masters qualifiers, which are unfortunately sort of in that mid pro season, which, you know,
Masters qualifiers, the lunacy of it is always non-understated.
Well, look, I'm just saying you only have so much sort of mental capacity and physical capacity, and so we had Masters qualifiers, Swiss Masters, Lake 38, Monaco, Morocco. I took that weekend off, and then obviously Botas last week and this one this week. It's a lot of tournaments. It's, you know, it's way more than half the season in about 2 months. So yeah, I'm gonna take a week off. Gonna go watch some. I'm gonna go to a field in the middle of Cheltenham and drink some beer and watch some music bands. After that, I haven't actually figured out my schedule pre-Worlds. It's kind of something I need to figure out in the next week or two, where I'm going to be, if I go back to America, if I'm going to stay in England. Of course, the English weather is a bit of a pain, because the water's going to be a lot colder in England than it is in Italy, and that is a factor. As I've never really...
Not that much colder.
Well, I think the water temperature on an average...
If you go to somewhere like Gosfield Lake or somewhere like that, I mean, the water temperature isn't going to matter, because that lake is pretty shallow and it heats up pretty well.
It also cools down quick. So, I mean, we don't know what the weather's going to be like in a month and a half, right? So you know, all the training, I'd like to sort of fairly well limit the variables for the training. So we'll see. I need to figure all that out. I mean, I love skiing in Oxford with Steve Glanfield. I was there in between the Morocco tournament and Botas, but at the same time, I just need to I need to understand where I'm going to be to maximize my chances.
Pretty unfortunate that this season England or the United Kingdom doesn't get a pro tournament that we can rally behind.
Yeah, I think I mean there's people talking about doing something next year, so yeah.
Okay,
that's an exclusive, Tony.
Oh, you want an exclusive?
So anyway,
let's try that again, Chewy. An exclusive.
There we go. Hopefully, some British tournaments. I've heard talk of maybe one or two. So fingers crossed, at least one of those will happen. And you know, we like skiing in England, yeah. And we can continue this European tour even a little longer.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And obviously, this is a world's year. You are the current world champion, and you certainly went out of your way to tell us that you got a second world championship title. Which I mean, what you won in what is it?
2017.
Yeah, in 2017. And the second one, you said, basically proved that the first one wasn't a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of one-time world champions, but if you do two, then you're a two-time world champion, and that's yeah, I feel good about that. But I'm obviously want to push that up as high as possible with the maximum number that I can. I mean, I'm not a young man anymore. I'm 35, so I don't have, you know, maybe that many more opportunities. But I, you know, like I say, I'm working as hard as I can to give myself the best chance in Italy.
Indeed, indeed. So with that in mind, So with that in mind, I mean, it'll be potentially your first title defense in a country other than the United States, and France. No, it's going to be in Italy. It's going to be a really, really different vibe, you know, because I mean, there's going to be a whole mass of people that will be descendant upon Ruggeto, a site which go back in history that hasn't been particularly kind to you. You know, maybe you can expand upon that, but I mean, it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, what you're referring to, I think, is when I was on the Velcro release system on the good in my sort of, you know, I don't know, it was 2012.
Not too many people actually remember that you skied on a good at that time.
Yeah, my first little bit of my pro career. I won a couple of tournaments on a good. I had world championship medals. But anyway, yeah, that's a little while ago, but I had the Velcro system and it released on a deep water start, which was very unfortunate. That was at the European Championships, and I had Nick LaForestier on my Instagram a couple of years ago saying it was one of the funniest things he'd ever seen in water skiing.
What?
Which was very generous of him. Glad that I could, titillate a French guy, such a wonderful champion of our sport. Yeah, it was pretty amusing. This is a guy also who's now foiling a lot.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah,
so I'm not sure he's got the best taste in these sorts of things. I don't know.
Yeah, there are a good few people out there that foil, you know. But I mean, slaloming just basically kicks it.
Yeah, I'm up to. Hey, look, as long as you're not wake surfing.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd previously talked a little bit about taking breaks, going to concerts and what have you. But when the season ends after Mastercraft and Travers and that kind of stuff, do you have anything concrete planned so far as what you do in your off season, or what kind of goals you want to set in the off season?
Yeah, I'm going to have a bit of a different off season than I have before. I mean, last year I took 6.5 months off of
imposed off season
without really wanting to. The year before I did 3 months after having won the world, and then and took a purposeful 3 months off. And the year before that I did about 2.5 months. So this year I'm going to do less. I'm going to finish the season, carry on a little bit longer, stay in America, mess with some skis. I mean, I haven't done any sort of ski testing to speak of beyond, you know, just...
Didn't you contribute to anything to the Ion 3?
Neo 3 a little bit.
Neo
3, yeah. I mean, I want to sort of mess with new settings and stuff. I mean, I switched the Neo 3 in between Masters and Lake 38 this year, so I just didn't have time to kind of... I'm sort of stuck on what I'm on, right? I want to see what I can do, if I can put my boots in a better place, find some better fin settings and mess with some binding and I don't know stuff I'm gonna go to Australia with Dad, and we're gonna watch some cricket. We're gonna watch the Ashes, watch England inevitably just get destroyed by the Australians. We're gonna go to the first two tests.
The level of pessimism there.
Well, I mean, look at, have you seen the score today? I mean, it's an absolute disaster against India in England. So I mean, what chance do we have against the Aussies in down under? But anyway, that'll be a lot of fun. I'm excited for that, and I'll go ski hopefully with Ryan Green and Sarah Green in Perth, at Bonnie's place, which I've skied there before. I loved it, so I'm excited to go back there. And that'll take me through till kind of mid-December, and then maybe I'm going to go to Thailand on the way back and sort of have a few beers with some of my friends, and maybe I'll take my ski there and see what that place is like. So I'm going to do a bit more skiing, but I don't want to ski through the off-season too much, because you know the toll on the body is quite a lot. I need to heal up, but I'm gonna stay fit and strong and try and hit the ground running a little bit more than I was able to this year.
You don't fancy coming back to Italy for the Winter Olympic Games?
No, I don't care. I don't like the Olympics. I think they're a little nonsense.
Okay.
I wrote an article about it, Tony. It was in Greg's water ski journal. I mean, the Olympics are fine, but I could have a pretty strong debate with someone who thinks that the water skiing should enter the Olympics.
Okay, yeah. I think something came out a few weeks ago. The IWWF was trying to solicit opinions as to the viability of having our sport in the Summer Olympic Games in 2032. And I mean, your take on that?
I mean, I think what
that would be in Brisbane.
Yeah, I think what we really, really don't want as a sport is to have more governing bodies involved, because they do. I mean, overall, the governing bodies are not helping us in the slightest already. So, you know, I think that when and also, I mean, my overall point with the Olympics is that when you have one moment of every 4 years, one, it's unfair because someone who's undeserving can win, like the Italian guy that won in the 100 meter sprint. 4 5 years ago, who hasn't won, never won before nor since.
Okay.
And he's immortalised. I think that's just very unfair and unfortunate.
Or even that Aussie in the Winter Olympic Games in 2002.
Well, exactly. And I mean, so and I think that overall, you know, it would have put a spotlight on our sport once every 4 years, but I think that would minimize what, you know, you get the spotlight, but I mean, who's then going to follow water skiing for the rest of the time? And I think that the most successful sports, they have stuff that happen that happens across a long period every year, that you know, Formula One, Premier League, NFL, NHL, you know, whatever you like. These are the most successful sports. The ones that have, you know, you have a spotlight on it once every 4 years and it becomes completely irrelevant 3.5 years after that, that's not good. It's not good for the athletes. You have you know, all the funding goes onto, you know, onto one event. I'm not into it. I think what we need to do is what's already happening, which is to grow the professional side of it, to get people excited about it, to get people watching TWBC. We have a phenomenal product. And I think, you know, the Olympics has a cast iron motivation for the sports that they bring into the Olympics not to transcend it. They don't want any sport that they bring in to get bigger than the Olympics. They want it to be the biggest thing and the ultimate prize in it, which I think, you know, it doesn't always work. Plus, not to mention you have the breakdancing nonsense that we saw last year. That's not
in the next games or any other Olympic games from that.
No, and it was an embarrassment. I think the sport's probably done a lot worse out of that than any benefit particularly.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it comes down to being able to control your own destiny. You know, as a governing body, as an organization, to try and push your own sport natively, and you know, instead of having to rely upon an exterior entity to push itself and using your sport to do so.
Exactly. And I mean, and you read the news where you have like the people on, I don't know, the British netball team who are having to live off cereal and potatoes because they don't, you know, because they suddenly get dropped randomly from the
Commonwealth Games or something like that.
Yeah. And the funding doesn't support them. They only get, you know, they have to have, you know, three other jobs because they're only getting £15,000 a year or whatever of funding. And that doesn't cover everything. So, you know, I think that the best thing we can have is a professional tour that people care about, that people follow end to end, and that's what I believe. And people, you know, there'll be people like that to disagree with me, but you know, that's fine by me.
Okay, and that brings us a little bit towards the Water Ski Pro Tour that was brought into place how many years ago? About 3-4 years ago now.
I think this is season number 5.
Season 5.
Yeah.
So
Nate has 2, Will has 2, I have 0.
Okay,
that's how I can count.
That's something that we can discuss a little bit for another time, you know. But I mean, what's kind of been the kind of driving force keeping it going forward, and what kind of obstacles have you seen in the way that have been that have been in the way of its, you know, of where it currently stands right now, between where you ultimately want it to go?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the good thing about it, it's been accepted. I mean, it's something that people look to. It's, you know, people know that that's where the information is, and it's sort of accepted that, you know, if you are top of the Water Ski Pro Tour leaderboard, you are the best in the world. You know, that's because you've won the most events, attended and made the effort to be a professional skier. So I think that's all really good. There's a lot of foundational stuff that's really fantastic. I think that in terms of, you know, challenges, you know, there's unfortunately tournaments that are not in it that you know should be. They've decided not to be because of I think sponsor interference, frankly, which I think is a shame. I'm not going to go too deep on that, but people will understand what I mean. Maybe
I think there are people out there that already know.
So, you know, I did the best thing for the sport, and I think that, you know, there's some things I keep hearing rumors of for next year. I think that, you know, obviously the best thing for the sport would be to have one tour, one banner that goes around everything. Water Ski Pro Tour was, you know, it's partners with the International Federation. The Federation, you know, I hope would support that view, that to have one all-encompassing brand around all of professional water skiing is for sure the best. Like Formula One, like the Premier League, you know, like NFL. These are the as I mentioned before, these are the most powerful brands in sport. Well, I hope we don't get to a point. I'm worried that we are going to get to the point where there's going to be fragmentation, where there's going to be a tour pulled by, you know, which is you know, a certain sponsor pushes it in a certain way to fragment it. I mean, if we look at wakeboarding, there's a view in water skiing which is incorrect, that wakeboarding has a lot more money in it than our sport. It's actually not true. Wakeboarding has, in the last sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years, has completely died a death professionally, and the number of events has sort of fallen off. But there is, you know, there's the Nautique series, there's the Supra Tour, there's this, there's that, there's all sorts of bitty bits and pieces. The problem with having competing tours and series and whatever is that no one knows which one matters. No one knows who really the best athlete is, because there's all sorts of different ranking lists. And so in the end, the consumer, the guy we're trying to get to kind of, to, you know, base his weekend around watching the water skiing, around, you know, to you know, buy the skis, to you know, become a water skier, join the federation, etc., whatever, he doesn't care. He doesn't care because he doesn't understand it, so he can't care. So he doesn't buy in. And I'm worried that we're going to go to a situation where there's competing tours. That's just That's obviously the worst for everybody. That is going to stop pro water skiing reaching its potential. And you know, that's certainly the view. I was having a conversation with a number of the very, very top pro water skiers at the tournament last weekend, and the view is, you know, this is just, you know, we're too small of a sport to be infighting and bickering. And you know, I just hope that the selfish interests that might put that together don't, frankly, and we can actually grow a sport all together instead of fighting more and more and causing damage to what we all really should love. And I fear that the people that are, I'm probably saying a bit too much here, that you know, because I sort of have heard these rumours, which I'm quite worried about, and I hope that people that might be putting these things in place, they understand that it's not actually in the best interest of the sport and the people that love it.
So we've plenty of stuff afoot so far as entities and what have you, you know, trying to push their agendas within the sport. We'll kind of leave it at that point. Thank you very much, Freddie. We'll wish you the very best of luck, and I'm sure that you've got your take a little bit of time towards the end of this podcast to thank some entities that you hold hold dear.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it again. I mean, you know, thank you to everybody that's shown me support. It really has meant a lot, you know, especially this last year. You know, these sort of messages of encouragement made me feel like I was, you know, not facing an uphill battle by myself. You know, my sponsors, D3 Mastercraft, I had a conversation with my boss at Mastercraft, and she told me that she never had any doubt that I would be back. And I was like, that is really quite fantastic to get that from a sponsor, because it, you know, these, you do sort of worry about these things that you know, that coming back if it was hard, then I wouldn't have their support. So it was very, very cool, very grateful to a lot of people.
The kind of worry that keeps you up at night?
No, I mean, there's lots of things keep me up at night, Tony, but not that. I didn't feel that was, you know, it's a good thing. I mean, I've heard of certainly people with other sponsors who've kind of felt that they were, you know, weren't supported in their sort of, you know, more difficult times, and I just didn't have that. It wasn't a worry, it wasn't something I had to consider, so I'm really really grateful for that. I'm on the right team or teams.
Excellent stuff there, and we'll conclude the podcast, the episode there on the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, coming to you from San Gervasio in Italy. It's going to be the 11th edition of the San Gervasio Pro-Am, which will take place. But until that time, and until the next episode, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.